Well, this was just a major, very major discovery. And what the scientists concluded was that the resulting match to human and lizard DNA on the trace swab was a wonderful revelation, and that never before, to our knowledge, has a trace sample matched a set of witness accounts as well as this does. If this is all true, the DNA indicates it is, then they're a humanoid reptilian.
Kathleen Martin, Betty and Barney Hill's niece.
The story that I never spoke, except for to my mother, was that she and I were taken. We found ourselves in the presence of these non-humans on craft. I was traumatized by this. It took me years to work through this experience. And then periodically, I had memories of finding myself in this kind of environment again. And sometimes there were witnesses to craft. They saw this craft outside my home when I was having these memories of being taken to it.
The smoking gun from the Betty and Barney Hill story is the star map.
Betty remembered this star map under hypnosis, and Dr. Simon gave her the post-hypnotic suggestion that she could sketch this if she could do so accurately, and it didn't bother her too badly. She did, and there was a scientific investigation of the star map where the stars were actually identified years later. They had special properties.
My guest is Kathleen Martin, and you probably know the name. Kathleen Martin is the niece of Barney and Betty Hill. They were experiencers. The tremendous thing about this is their interracial dynamic. And at the time we're going in our history right now, with all of this crisis that brings this to the fore, I'm just going to dive right into it. I think it's incredible that they chose somebody who were so devoted to each other and so incredible in the terms of their humanitarian interests. They were a wonderful example of what we would like to be as human beings. Now, that's my take on it. But I do appreciate Kathleen Martin because she's the niece and she can go through and validate that and say, hey, there's more to this than just, you know, a specimen. These are people and this was their life and these were their interests. And they got kind of derailed, basically majorly derailed with their ET abduction UFO experience. So, Kathleen Martin, I want you to set the record straight, as if you haven't done that for the last decades, several decades, of what it's like to have been in the spotlight when everybody's saying they saw a UFO and then their whole life has changed and it becomes bigger than life. So there you go. I'm going to throw the whole thing at you, like the kitchen sink and everything. How's that?
Okay. Well, I was 13 years old when Betty and Barney had their experience in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. And they were on a short vacation, driving home at night because there was a hurricane whirling up the coast. They wanted to arrive home before it hit. They knew that if they grew tired, they would stop for the night and then head on to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, on New Hampshire seacoast in the morning. They had anticipated an arrival at 2 o'clock in the morning. They were familiar with that route. They knew how long it would take. Yet when they arrived in Portsmouth, their clothing was torn. The tops of Barney's best dress shoes were so deeply scraped he had to buy new shoes. It was after 5 o'clock in the morning, not 2 or 3. And the leather binocular strap that Barney had around his neck as he stood in a field in Lincoln, New Hampshire, looking at this craft that was only 100 feet overhead, observing the non-human entities that were on that craft looking down at him as he watched something drop down out of the bottom of the craft and became terrified that there was a plan for him and that that plan was to capture him like, quote, a bug in a net, close quote. He ran to the car. He tore the binoculars from his neck, breaking the strap in the process. The craft now moved overhead. She, Betty, and Barney heard a series of code-like buzzing sounds striking the trunk of the vehicle a tingling sensation passed through their bodies as if only a moment had passed. They were 35 miles south of the previous spot. They had vague memories of finding themselves on a dirt road. There were tall trees all around. It was a roadblock. There was a red glow that they saw through the woods. It reminded them of the setting sun. Yet,
wow,
the sun was not rising. The moon had set. They couldn't explain what this was. They had conscious, continuous recall of being followed by this craft, by having it come closer and closer and closer until it finally surged ahead and forced them to stop in the middle of the road before Barney stepped out and followed it into this field. Their watches they were wearing that night had stopped running and never ran again. Their car had been fine the previous night, but when they went out collect their luggage, there were shiny spots on the trunk, and those spots caused a compass needle to whirl, indicating a magnetic field. There were so many mysteries about that night. Being good citizens, they asked what they should do. They were told they should make a report to Pease Air Force Base in the next town over. That would result in a Project Blue Book report. They didn't want anyone to know that this had happened. They were willing to speak with scientists. They made a report to the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, and a scientist, an astronomer, did come out and interviewed them for a period of about 6 hours. Later, there were other scientists who came to interview Betty and Barney. They realized that they did have the significant period of missing time, and this was terribly troubling to Barney, especially with the physical evidence that something had happened, that Betty's breast was torn from waist to hemline on the lining, that the hem was torn down on one side, that the stitching at the back of the dress was torn, the thick zip of fabric was torn. So many mysteries concerning what had happened. Betty, more than Barney, was highly curious about what happened, about UFOs. Barney was in denial. He wanted to forget the whole thing. But it played again and again in his mind, all of those questions of what happened that night that he couldn't remember during that period of missing time, that amnesia that played on him, that caused him to have bleeding ulcers, that caused him to develop post-traumatic stress disorder, that led to his referral to Dr. Benjamin Simon in Boston. Dr. Simon had an outstanding career as a psychiatrist, a neuropsychiatrist, to use deep trance hypnosis to resolve psychosomatic symptoms. He had built a reputation for himself during World War II when he successfully treated veterans who were returning from the war front who had shell shock and conversion hysteria, the same symptoms that Barney was experiencing with different names in 1961. He was a perfect person for Barney to be referred to. Betty went along with him. She asked to be treated as well. They were taken separately for a period of 6 months. Amnesia was reinstated at the end of each session. And Betty and Barney separately recalled being met by these non-human entities on that lonely dirt road in New Hampshire's White Mountain region, being taken from their vehicle to a landed craft. Greatly frightened, Betty, more than Barney, she fought to remain outside. She didn't want to be taken onto that landed craft. She kicked the entity next to her, tearing the lining of her dress, tearing down her hemline. When she was on the craft, she was given a very strange physical examination. Her dress was removed, but the examiner did not know how to undo a zipper, didn't recognize a zipper, tore it open, and damaged stitching. She was given a physical examination where they paid particular attention to her skeletal system, her nervous system, her skin, the openings in her body. The same happened to Barney in a separate room. A needle was produced, and Betty was placed on a table. She said, "What are you going to do with that?" And she was made to understand telepathically that they only wanted to do a simple test by inserting the needle into her navel. We knew nothing of amniocentesis in those days.
Okay, hold on. Hold on. Kathleen Martin, my guest. This is a fascinating story, and there's more to it and another a TV series in the works, too. We're going to find out more about that, talking about Barney and Betty Hill. 1961, the abduction and the close encounter, actually, and the abduction of Betty and Barney Hill. So much has happened since then. We've learned a lot about contactees, about experiencers, and Kathleen has more to the story in terms of her own experiences that she's going to throw into the equation. But we were just in the middle where you were talking about the needle. Now, I want to also mention that I saw on Amazon Prime the movie Beyond the Spectrum being taken. And it's a fabulous film. You're in that. And it also features some of that audio from Barney's hypnotherapy session. And as he's talking about seeing the beings, and it's, you hear in the fear in his voice, and he's distraught, and you hear that emotion, not wanting to be anywhere near that place at that time and trying to take his eyes off of it so that it would break the spell. So that is a wonderful piece, I think, this documentary type, Beyond the Spectrum, being taken, available on Amazon Prime for anybody who wants to get up to speed on this. And then there's a new series that I had just seen that's going to be on, I don't know where I'm looking at my notes here and I don't see it. I'm looking at Deadline.com where it was announced. Are you part of this new series?
Yes. Bryce Abel took an option on the book that Stanton Friedman and I wrote, Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience.
Okay.
That was back in 2012. And now he has entered into an agreement for a television series under development with Steve Adams. What the series is going to look at is the larger canvas that allows us to see Betty and Barney not as abduction victims, but also as the heroes of the civil rights movement. So Jackie Zabel is the CEO of Stellar Productions. She has written this script along with her husband, and she says the audience has never been more receptive to hearing the story of both their marriage and their passion for equality, and the larger TV canvas will allow us to finally do justice to the complete picture, including restaging of the pivotal march on Washington,
wow,
where Barney walked with Martin Luther King.
Yeah. See, as you're talking about this, I'm getting goosebumps. I don't think this is an accident, the fact that the interest is here, the timing is here, that the people involved encapsulated all of our history at the same time, in addition with the UFO stuff that this threw everybody out into the deep end where they had no idea what they're dealing with. And then the civil rights movement, everything. It's extraordinary to have this all come together right now. Now, I also interrupted because you were telling the story of Betty's experience when they produced the needle. And that for her, again, reliving that through her hypnotherapy session, this isn't something you want to go through.
It was so traumatic for Betty that Dr. Simon had to end the session early. The examiner finally left the room, went in to examine Barney, and left Betty to dress herself, and then to converse with the leader who had taken her pain away when she experienced so much pain during this process. She asked him if he could tell her where he was from. She knew that he wasn't from here. Where was his home port? And he produced a star map. Betty remembered this star map under hypnosis, and Dr. Simon gave her the post-hypnotic suggestion that she could sketch this if she could do so accurately and it didn't bother her too badly. She did, and there was a scientific investigation of the star map where the stars were actually identified years later. They had special properties, and all of this information is in captured the Betty and Barney Hill UFO experience by Stanton Friedman and myself. And next year, for the 60th anniversary of the Hill's UFO encounter and abduction, I have updated the book. There will be an entire new chapter on all of the scientific research that has done since we wrote that book in 2007, and it was released to the public. So I'm very excited. I'm not going to reveal any of the new information today.
Of course not.
You'll hear, you will read about it in the book in next year.
Okay, fine. That's a nice little carrot, all right? It's not fair, but we're thrilled. I'm glad that it has the new information. Basically, if you are listening and you have not heard about any of this, Kathleen has several books, and she's been an advocate for experiencers all across the board. So there's some new information. That's what I saw when I got on your website. I was just looking to see how much, because I spoke with you, I think, back with Denise Stoner in 2014, I believe. And I wanted to find out what had happened since then. And so much has happened. Stanton Friedman died. He was a wonderful support for you. He's also featured in that Amazon Prime video or movie. And there's so much content here to work with. We have gone from kicking tires to all of a sudden riding in the vehicle and trying to figure out what the knobs are.
Yes. So. We have. I have worked tirelessly over the years with experiencers, conducting social research projects with experiencers. My first was small. It was with Denise Stoner. It was a survey, an experiencer questionnaire with only 45 questions. We had 75 participants. 25 of those were control groups so that we could ascertain what commonalities experiencers shared that were not common among the general population. Ray Hernandez, an experiencer and federal tax attorney, began the organization Free the Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. I'm on the board of directors of that organization. We did a larger study, a gigantic study, actually, of experiencers around the world. More than 4,000 obtained a lot more information. And then Dr. Don C. Don Derry and I and members of MUFON's experiencer research team did a three-year study on 516 experiencers to determine the differences in experiencers, those who had positive contact, those who had negative contact, those who were somewhere in between, and the characteristics they shared and the differences in them depending upon the type of experience they had. So exhaustive studies, we know a lot more about this now than we did in 2013.
And that's extraordinary. I do want to mention, too, the extraterrestrial contact, the book you have, What to Do When You've Been Abducted. A lot of this that's happening right now, especially when you're talking about the thousands, over 4,000 who had been studied of experiencers who were studied by the Free Group and Foundation for Extraterrestrial Research. I'm not doing it in the right order, but that's what it is. experiencers. And I actually filled out one of those anonymous forms as well, because there was a lot of paranormal. All of a sudden they're making the connection between when people are saying they're using different languages or terminology for ET, angel, fairy. There's that stuff going in there. There's things that they can't explain happening during an encounter, and all that is you're being asked these questions about, were you frightened? Did you experience healing? And it was a very intense, labor intensive survey, might I say. And at one point I'm like, okay, this is overwhelming. I don't think I need to complete it. I've just given you enough that you can do the math. And so that, you know, having from my end of it, having taken it, I can say you guys did, I think, a fantastic job of trying to add all of the elements together for people who have had contact in some way, shape, or form with something that they cannot identify. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And you spoke of the paranormal. That was something that Denise Turner and I discovered back in 2012. Had the results in 2013, wrote a little bit about it in our book. I can't remember the name of it.
I know how that goes.
The Alien Abduction Files.
Okay, yeah.
the title of that book, it has the results of that first little study. My new book, Extraterrestrial Contact, has the results of the three-year study I did with the Mutual UFO Network, some of the more significant findings. But in terms of the paranormal, we did discover that there are two highly significant paranormal phenomena that experiencers share. About 65% said that they had observed glowing light orbs in their homes that appeared to have intelligence and that sometimes expanded into non-human entities, and also 65% that they had the sensation that something unseen was walking on their bed.
Yeah, yeah.
There were other things at a smaller rate, such as poltergeist activity, that kind of thing, doors opening and closing, but highly significant for the two that I mentioned.
And see, that part of it, just to have recently come across that commonality, wow. And a part of it has to do with, for years, there had been stories and, you know, the early contactees, they're more than that. And especially like when you're talking about the aerial phenomenon down in South Africa, where the children witnessed UFOs and ETs, there have been experiences, but they've kind of been shunned, or the people who have tried to tell people about it made to feel that they were weird. And so they've been ostracized, ridiculed. And the more stories we have now, when we're putting the dots together, it's like, oh my gosh, here's something that they had and that had and that. And all of a sudden, here's all this information that by shunning people and making them feel shamed, we miss out on getting information and evidence that might help us, I think, come to terms with what's going on here that we have forever tried to, well, not forever, but during my lifetime, that we have tried to say, this is impossible, it cannot happen, so it must not be happening.
Yes, and the ridicule. There were government disinformants, there were schoolyard bully-type adults, there were debunkers, and they really created a lot of problems for experiencers for a very long time by saying, prove it to me. Most of these people didn't go forward with their story to begin with. Vic and Barney didn't, but the result of a violation of confidentiality created their story. Thomas Walton didn't. He was missing for a week. The men he worked with underwent the polygraph exams to prove that they had not murdered him time after time. The people who had these experiences did not tell the public about it.
Yeah.
They didn't report it except for confidentially. And it was time to say, no, we will not respond to you. It was time for experiencers to come together to be able to speak with one another without shame, without ridicule, to feel comfortable. And that is why I set up the experience or research team through the Mutual UFO Network. We now have 43 members. Five are mental health professionals who are just consultants to the team. The remainder work with experiencers in a supportive role on a day-to-day basis. They are also investigators. If the experiencers want to make a formal report for an investigation, if they want their evidence collected or analyzed, they can do that too without ridicule, without being told they should see a psychiatrist. But these investigators who are specialists on the experience of research team can also offer short-term support, can also make referrals to support groups, experience or workshop where they can speak confidentially to other experiencers. And also, we have a list of vetted mental health professionals and hypnotists and hypnosis practitioners who they can enter into a private relationship with to work through whatever it is that they want to do.
What I also want to ask in your book, because this is something that I think that isn't covered very often, and even when it is, there's still a lot of guessing. It's the book that you're trying to kind of, I think, give people an up-to-date look at how to defend yourself against alien abduction. And, you know, from what I've read and from what I have seen, reading over the stories and the encounters and stuff like that in my own experience, defense, usually that means you're going to fight, and that doesn't always, for some of the people that I have read about, fighting sometimes led to injuries or less than desirable results in terms of an aftermath, whether it was trauma, post-traumatic stress, or actually some kinds of injuries. So you're addressing that in the book. This is for people who are curious about what this might involve, extraterrestrial contact, or also think that maybe you've had your own experience. And I think this is helpful, giving people a way to assess what this might involve, and maybe that paranormal thing that happened to you wasn't a ghost. If it happens to you, can you make it stop?
Many people have made it stop when they wanted to.
If you do feel yourself caught up like Betty or Barney, and when you hear his voice, when he's saying, "God, don't let me... let me put down the binoculars. I can't keep looking. I have to stop," you know, trying to tell his mind and his body to cooperate without success. What happens? Check out the books, Captured, the Story of Betty and Barney Hill, Fact, Fiction, and Flying Saucers, that book with Stanton Friedman. Find out more behind the scenes, I guess more of the nuts and bolts, and Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted. Kathleen-Marden.com. She's also working on a new book, which she's teasing right here. Thank you, Kathleen. Kind of thank you and not thank you. Because she's not going to tell us what's in that spinal chapter. Okay. Well, all right. That's building the stage and setting the stage. But okay, I want to go back on your website. You had a story about a woman, an experiencer, and you've worked with many that had possibly some evidence, DNA evidence. I wanted to find out more about that case. Can you share it?
And I can. 8 years ago, Denise Stoner and I both received phone calls from this woman, Sherry, and she lived in Florida. We knew her, and she said that she had a visitation during the night that a reptilian, and this entity produced a kind of medical instrument that he had in. This instant into her. She had a precancerous condition. She was experiencing a great deal of pain. When this happened, she felt warmth in her body. When it was extracted and he left her environment, she was healed. And you never know, you know, if this was real, what evidence is there for it, but Denise Stoner said to her, collect the evidence on a swab. Insert the swab inside yourself to collect evidence if it's there. Mm-hmm. Put it into a bag and put it into your freezer. We don't have a scientist who can analyze this right now, but perhaps we will find one in the future. And we did. And she sent that swab to Lynn Mann, who is the scientist who is now doing DNA testing through the Mutual UFO Network. Lynn the DNA testing on this swab and had this shocking discovery that there was DNA that was closest to the giant tegu lizard from South America. This lizard is the closest to human DNA of any lizard on Earth. So this was remarkable, too.
Wow.
So,
wow. Well, and, you know, the lizard regenerates. So we're talking a different type of biology and genetic capability through being able to remanufacture, whether it's a tail, an arm, a leg, a figure. Wow. So what do you conclude from that?
Well, this was just a major, very major discovery. And what the scientists concluded was that the resulting match to human and lizard DNA on the trace swab was a wonderful revelation, and that never before, to our knowledge, has a trace sample matched a set of witness accounts as well as this does, even with the apparent lesser signal seen on the lizard gel. The potential for this study to be repeated with success on further samples of this type is high. It is for this reason the witness and the pattern partners involved feel that this should be published. And it is simply amazing because Mann said, then there are, if this is all true, the DNA indicates it is, then they're a humanoid reptilian.
Wow. Okay, and see, there are people, and I know one, John Foster UFOs, John Foster, who's now in his 80s and has drawings and has had, you know, numerous contact, basically 40 years of contact from childhood. He remembers the beings that he saw. One of the beings he drew pictures of was a reptilian. And other people, you know, they've said that reptilians are here, and there are various descriptions, various pictures, and people think that's just too ludicrous. That's just impossible. Again, it's impossible, so it can't happen. It's like, we have to get beyond that. We're not going anywhere, just, stirring the pot, going, nope, can't happen. And with this, with the DNA evidence and a timeline from this is the person, this is how it happened, this is what happened, here's the result, here's the physical product of this, that could set, I think that could put our science forward decades, if not, a huge leap that says that we are not just human, we are more than that, and here's the proof that we have been enhanced in some way. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, absolutely. And this is the smoking gun. And we are collecting through the MUFON's experiencer research team and our investigations more and more evidence. I now have a verified, you could call it an abduction, of three people. And they were conducting an experiment at night. They had left a video camera running. They were attempting to communicate with non-humans. They have electronic voice phenomena confirming what happened as well. The video camera during this process has video of non-human entities coming into the frame.
Video.
One video.
Excellent.
Video evidence. It is just remarkable, and I'm so happy that the years of frustrating investigation and coming up against the non-believers and the schoolyard bullies who wanted to bully me out of doing all of this research are finally coming to fruition. Just being single-minded and straightforward and doing this research, hoping that one day we would have evidence. And now we do. And we're collecting it. And when we amass a large enough collection of evidence, it will be revealed all at once to the public.
Oh. There's another tease. Okay. All right. Kathleen Martin, my guest, and the new book, the one that you're adding the new chapter to, that will be out next year, 2021.
Yes. To commemorate the 60th anniversary of Betty and Barney Hill's UFO abduction, after the Betty and Barney Hill UFO experience.
You can check out, there's a wonderful, I think, film on Amazon Prime that talks about Betty and Barney, and then also Kathleen's perspective. I'll put links on the website. But Kathleen's website, kathleen-martin.com, to find out more information. Okay, now for the rest of the story. Here's a preview.
One of those experiments that Betty was doing was to ask the craft to land on my grandparents' farm. I grew up across the street from my grandparents. And in April of 1966, my grandparents were in bed when they were awakened by a sound. They looked out the window and they saw a glowing craft outside near their woods. There was also a person who was a neighbor, a commercial pilot, returning home from work. He saw this craft coming in. It left physical trace evidence on the ground. And the story that I never spoke, except for to my mother, was that she and I were taken that night. My childhood home was 250 feet from this landing area. We found ourselves in the presence of these non-humans on craft. I was traumatized. It took me years to work through this experience. And then periodically, I had a memory of finding myself in this kind of environment again. And sometimes there were witnesses to craft. They saw this craft outside my home when I was having these memories of being taken to it. Initially, people would say that I was carrying my aunt and uncle's trauma in my own body. It wasn't that. It was my own trauma that I was carrying in my body. And I had never intended to speak about this publicly. But people would come up to me and they would say, without my ever having spoken about it, you should talk about your own experiences. Mm-hmm. It will help so many people. And I think it was just the weight of their voices that finally convinced me that I should tell the truth and that it would help others.
Kathleen Martin, the niece of Betty and Barney Hill. And, you know, being 13, I can remember what was going on in my life at 13, and it wasn't about UFOs or ETs. Now, it was about ghosts. I did have my own experiences and had some very extraordinary experiences as a kid, but I didn't even know that from point A to point B, we could get to where we are in my lifetime now, talking about the reality of having somebody who had an encounter with a reptilian and having that validated, documented, verified as evidence. And then not only that, having on tape or video actual encounters that would show another being not from our dimension. These are extraordinary times. And I'm so glad that I'm able to talk with Kathleen about it, because she was there at the beginning when Betty and Barney are trying to go through their experience and saying, this is real, it's legit. And nobody wanted to believe. But it takes this long for us as a society to experience a paradigm shift. So I wanted to go back and ask, in terms of you, have you had your own contact experiences, and what is that like, given that you have a little bit more awareness? Do you know what to look for and how to shift it, how to, you know, how, can you control it better, control yourself better? I guess I have a lot of questions for somebody who has their own experiences is, you know, how do you manage that? Does that make sense?
It does. When I was 17 years old, my Aunt Betty was doing a series of psychophysics experiments with a team of scientists. And they would give her scripts that she would, every night, attempt to send in telepathic messages to these non-humans that abducted her in 1961. And the scripts given to her would give certain words, a location, a date, how many days into the year that was, and where the scientists should go to see this class. It met with limited success. But one of those experiments that Betty was doing was to ask the craft to land on my grandparents' farm. I grew up across the street from my grandparents. And in April of 1966, my grandparents were in bed when they were awakened by a sound. They looked out the window, and they saw a glowing craft outside near their woods. There was also a person who was a neighbor, a commercial pilot, returning home from work. He saw this craft coming in. It left physical trace evidence on the ground. And the story that I never spoke, except for to my mother, was that she and I were taken that night. My childhood home was 250 feet from this landing area. We found ourselves in the presence of these non-humans on craft. I was traumatized by this. It took me years to work through this experience. And then periodically, I had a memory of finding myself in this kind of environment again. And sometimes there were witnesses to craft. They saw this craft outside my home when I was having these memories of being taken to it. It happened more than one time.
Wow. Okay, wait. Okay, so 17, that's how old you were when this happened.
That's correct.
And you had, were these memories that you, they were not, did something, a trauma or some kind of a prompt bring them to your mind, or did was it through hypnosis? How did you remember?
I remembered them immediately.
Okay.
I never forgot part of it.
Okay.
I was able to recover more memories through hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with Dr. James Harder initially, way back in the 1970s, then with Bud Hopkins, and then with Denise Stoner. But it was Denise who really helped me because she was there. She ran a support group where I could speak for the first time about my memories of what had happened,
mm-hmm.
and it was very healing. And it, I think it was through those experiences that I realized how important it was for experiences to be met with acceptance rather than ridicule. It was as if a weight had been lifted from my shoulders.
Okay, I want to interject. I just want to concur because I remember meeting you in person in Kansas City at an event, and it would have been, oh, maybe 4 or 5 years before I spoke with you and Denise. You were, it was, I don't remember if it was a MUFON event. I know that the organizer was Margie Kay here, and she works with Missouri MUFON, and it's a hotel that's no longer active. But I remember the look, you're in your composure. There was a little bit of, I think, just an apprehension about how you were presenting, and there was a feeling about you that had more of a not quite comfortable because of the material that you were presenting. And, you know, that would, I'm projecting my own interpretation, okay? But there was a sense of just not a trust, okay? There was a thing of, I'm doing this, but I'm not quite sure how how much I want to put out. Versus now, when you're experienced now, you are comfortable, you are confident, you know your place, and you know that what has happened to you is valuable. And there's a difference in the person that you were then, from my experience and my impression, as opposed to the person that you are now. And I want to take that to a bigger picture and say, because of sharing, because of exposure, because of, in some way, shape, or form, an activation of awareness and saying, this is happening, this is real, this is validated, more people, I think, are like you, coming forward and saying, this is real, I experienced it, I own it, and I want to know more about it.
You know, initially, people would say that I was carrying my aunt and uncle's trauma in my own body. It wasn't that. It was my own trauma that I was carrying in my body. And I had never intended to speak about this publicly. But people would come up to me and they would say, without my ever having spoken about it, you should talk about your own experiences. Mm-hmm. It will help so many people. And I think it was just the weight of their voices that finally convinced me that I should tell the truth. And that it would help others.
It's validation. It says that, especially with your incredibly close contact to Betty and Barney, you have the behind the scenes. You saw the psychological effect on them. And then having your own experience with it, you felt it. So firsthand, we get the response, and we get how you are able to integrate and work with it and go forward. And that's what this is about for people who are traumatized and people who don't have some kind of a place to say, this is happening to me and what do I do? Is there something wrong with me? No, there isn't. There's just something wrong with our society right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And most people preface what they say to me, members of my team, with, you will probably think I'm crazy, but.
Yeah. Yes. That's how every conversation starts. And you know, okay, here comes the good stuff.
And then they think, if only I were, I could take a pill and this would all end.
It could go away. It could go away.
Take a pill. Yeah.
But the thing is, we have to get beyond that. And the only way for that to happen is to compare the notes and to get these stories out, to get that garbage that makes you a lesser human being because you have had this experience. Get past that. That's beneath us. In your way, with all of the information that you have at your access, the fact that Stanton Friedman, who was extremely, I believe, dedicated to getting this out and getting some science behind it and getting rid of the skeptics who had nothing to go on except say it doesn't exist. Well, that's there's no science there either. That's just denial. So getting away from that element, I think, is very important too.
I agree.
What would you like in terms of going forward, the takeaway from your experience, from the books you've written, and from your aunt and uncle's experience? Because, yeah, you are carrying that forward, and thank God. I really appreciate the fact that you took it on. And I know it hasn't always been pleasant, but you're in a place now where you're getting validation and you're getting credibility. So going forward, what is your goal?
Going forward, I want to see a paradigm shift in our science, in developing a science that can understand extraterrestrial technology, can understand the paranormal, will understand consciousness, and we are beginning to head in that direction. So it's very gratifying to know that I've made a mark, that I've been able to initiate a change along with other people. It isn't just me, but I made a small mark in this movement to move forward and to study the evidence, to attempt to understand it. and to assist experiencers, to let them know that they're not alone, that this is real, that we do have evidence that it's real.
And I think that's the big E, evidence. Evidence, that's what we've been waiting for, to be able to tie the knot and say, this is legit. In the works right now is this series, and this is a TV series based on Betty and Barney Hill's experience. And I'm thinking, wow, this is so fantastic. The timing for this, that is in the works right now. You're also part of that. And do you have a timeline? Have they given you a date on when this might come out?
No, I don't have a timeline. The script has been written. The partnership has been sealed. And it's just a matter of waiting now to see if the television network will pick up.
Okay. Well, now that we've got cable and we've got the internet, Amazon Prime, we have a whole lot more possibilities for outlets. And then the book that you're working on, the 60th anniversary edition of the Betty and Barney Hill story, that is coming out in 2021. And it'll still be called Captured?
It will.
Okay. So for the final chapter, maybe not the end all be all, but the expanded version with the updates and the science, that chapter will be included and captured. And all right, just one final question. The most extraordinary experience you had during your encounter, what would that have been?
The thing that is most prominent in my mind is lying on a table, feeling a very strong tingling sensation pass through my body, and having these non-humans project love toward me that was a greater love than I have ever experienced on this planet. It's incredible. This is the kind of love that near-death experiencers speak of when they come back, that they have gone to a place that has pure love. That's what I experienced.
And what's not to like about that? And what's to feel ashamed about with that? And that you have to hide, and that makes you somehow less than or an oddity and not worthy from our society's perspective. I don't get that. Yeah. So I'm glad that you are finally, because there's just a tremendous difference in your own, in your authentic, you know, but your own confidence of, this is where we're going, this is where we've come, and this is where we can get to if we start connecting the dots and putting all of our stories together. So for all of the experiencers who need your support and assist, you know, in some way, shape, or form, validation, Extraterrestrial Contact is the book. It's got some great reviews on Amazon, and 5 out of 5 stars I saw of one, and then I saw, oh, yep, that's on your page too. So Kathleen, thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your work, your dedication. I'm looking forward to seeing the outcome of the Betty and Barney Hill series, and in also the final chapter there, darn you.
It was great to talk with you again, and thanks for having me back on.
I appreciate you. And thank you for listening. If you need more information, wendyscoffeehouse.com.